the pre-conference discussion.
Can we, because the idea of part of the ranch is to have agriculture so that we can sustain ourselves to some extent, or rather teach these guys some skilled trades, but, you know, carpentry and whatever.
Yeah.
And, well, who better, who knows agriculture better than a lot of these immigrants, a lot of these refugees? They're coming from places where they scratched out a living from the earth all their life, and then they get brought here and shuffled into these entitlement lines, and they wind up being a janitor at White Castle. But why not give the guy a swing and shot, take him out here in this environment, and don't worry about transportation. He lives there.
Well, it's worth a try. I just know how quickly... I'm not poo-pooing the idea at all. I'm just saying, hey, try it and see what happens. It's something worth trying. But like I worked with the Bhutanese Nepali refugees here in town, and did some research with them for my doctoral work, and it's like immediately they catch the American vision dream scenario, and their young people want to go to city schools. Education, get a job, get a car, get into college, and they want to get into the urban upward chain as quick as possible. And I think you're always going to have that, but I'm not saying that wouldn't be something that some from some areas would. And I'm thinking that maybe more of the rural African situation might yield itself to that.
I'm thinking there's got to be country boys everywhere. I mean,
yeah.
I've lived in the suburbs all my life, and I'm trying to get back to the sticks.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah,
yeah. Out there, because that's an unreached people group.
Sure.
So, I mean, go out there and, God gives you the desires of your heart, right?
Right. Speaking of sticks, I mean, there's a farm girl right there.
Yeah.
this girl loves a farm.
Belt, Indiana. Well, 700 people.
That's sticks.
No stoplights.
Right on.
I mean... That's out there where you don't wash the dirt off at night as a ritual. You know, you just leave it on there. Leave it in those fingernails. That's God's green earth, right? That's God's earth. Leave it there.
Come off your
phone. Yeah.
Yep.
I tell you, that's cool. Well, let's get started. So you're really interested in that, especially refugee work. And introduce yourself again.
Sarah Newfield.
Sarah Newfield, yeah. And I kind of ask in these sessions, since this, you know, to come to this session, when you talk about missions, you really got to be thinking something specific. So no matter what I have to talk about, I kind of want to say, what are you interested in? You know, and I feel like you're interested. Now, you're in school, and I know you have a heart for missions, whatever, but so you're probably just here because anything to do with missions, you're here, right?
Yep.
But any particular interest that you have, too, is today?
Remember Corey?
Yes.
Okay, Corey's over in China right now, in Beijing.
Yeah.
Working with youth over there.
Cool,
so, I would love, like, after I graduate, to go do something like that.
Yeah. I'm headed there in June.
Okay.
We're going to be, Lord willing, if it materializes, we'll see how it happens. You know, our communication with those folks is difficult. But we're supposed to be training youth ministry professors for the underground seminaries of China starting in June.
Okay.
So we'll be going to Wanzhou, twice a year, hopefully. Of course, once we get there, we never know where we're going to be teaching because it's hush-hush where they're going to go, but we'll see. All right, well, and what is your interest in coming here today?
Why did you say that?
Because I want to hear what you have to say.
I've just been praying lately that whatever God's plan is for our family, that He would just begin to prepare my heart for.
Yeah.
I am still, I'm open to the, you know, idea of going, you know, in the mission field. Interested in the international community, in Americana. I know no other language except for English, so that's a big barrier. But
that's kind of spotty there, country.
But you know, like I went on my first mission trip to Jamaica. Was it last year?
That's right.
And God really opened my eyes to a lot of things there.
Yeah.
I'm still scared of the fact to take my family into, like, the, you know, unreached places of the world. You know, we have 4 kids, you know, and it's just scary for me.
Yeah, but sure.
Still open to whatever God wants.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Asking him to prepare my heart for that.
Okay. Good. All right, let's open prayer, and I'll share some things, and we'll just kind of let your interest direct us where we want to go, perhaps. But let's pray. Lord, thank you for a chance to get together and, again, just look at things which will touch our heart and our passion for the lost world. And we just pray that you would give us even a little more direction, even today in this session, of how you want us to focus our energies toward reaching the goal of the Great Commission. And there are a lot of fears, and as Heather's talked about it, it's just that's normal, that's natural, and we all have them, and that's okay. It's nothing wrong with that. We just pray that when the time comes that you lead us and call us to what to do, that you take those fears and wrap them up in your grace and your love and your mercy, and you'll allow us to do your calling no matter what those fears might be, and dissolve those fears, because they're overcome by the love that you put in our heart for the world that you love so dearly. And we'll give you glory for anything that's done and accomplished today, in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, just for fun, I want to show you a little video that I don't usually do videos like this. My videos, as others have seen in my class, are more of real people in real situations that are kind of odd. But this one struck my attention, and I think it's worth, since it just happened this month, I think it's probably good if you haven't seen this, to take a look at kind of a non-Christian presentation of the thing that we're kind of all about. So let's take a look at this. Thank you. Interesting. I like that video because it's not done by the IMB or anybody else that where you'd think, well, you know, they're just trying to hype us up about the numbers. But the reality is National Geographic doesn't, you know, has no interest in evangelicalism. But, and they leave out a lot of information. It's surprising that they didn't put a lot of information about, you know, talk about water and sanitation, but war and disease, you know, are huge. And that's a big factor in that, why five are born, two die, and that leaves us a net gain of three every second. But the fact that there are 7 billion people on the planet, just amazing. And for this particular session, we're talking about, I put that up there because they're overflowing over to here. You know, they're coming here. But just even though there's a lot of refugees here and international students here, you know, you're probably still talking less than 3 million that are official refugees and international students. That's not even a blip in the bucket of 7 billion people. But the interesting thing is that this is the world, sort of like the world at our door. You mentioned 80 languages spoken in your county there. That wasn't true 30 years ago. And the issue is not how many are coming to the U.S. for various reasons. The issue is what are we, the church, doing about it for the ones that come here? And we need to quit thinking about the idea that some of them are coming here that we can reach, and there's not that very many of them, but some of them will go back eventually. And when they go back, will they go back as antagonistic to Christianity as they came? Or will they go back as Christians and plant churches and become part of a Christian community that will thrive? All accomplished without one of us ever having to step foot on an airplane. You know, that's pretty cheap missions. You look at it that way. Now, on the other hand, some people get a bug from that and end up getting on a plane and taking off and going and become a part of that community, which is fine too. But in regard to just student ministry, particularly what this conference is about, and doing youth ministry, I put together just a little bit. I have a focus on international students, college student ministry that, you know, we've talked about. But, you know, we can go a little different direction if we want to do that. Let's see, where's my little clicker thing? Oh, there it is. Let me go back. That was quick. Let me just talk about one, for example. In whether people like it or not, the public school system exists in this country. And here's one of the factors. 2008, this stats were out, which is already about 3 years old. But there are 98,000 public schools, 35,000 private Christian parochial schools, and that includes homeschooling kids. So right now in the U.S., there are 55, almost 56 million. I think they're probably by the time, if the actual statistics would be, we would have already bumped that 56 million mark. 56 million public school students as opposed to 6 million private and parochial. So as much as we talk about the church's idea of forming Christian schools or Christian home or homeschooling kids or forming homeschooling networks as a way to disciple kids and minister to them more effectively, and I'm not opposed to that at all. How many of you went to a private school, Christian school, homeschool? All three of you. I think youth ministries and churches ought to be, you know, very supportive of that. But at the same time, not to the exclusion of this. Because still, only 1/10 of the students in this country go to private schools, Christian schools, or homeschool. In fact, this is even true with the Southern Baptist Convention. If you see that stat there, 9 out of 10 Southern Baptist teenagers still go to public high schools. Now, I bring this up because, and this isn't counting colleges, this is just primary and secondary schools. One of the ways that we can reach, and we'll just touch on this, and if you're not interested, we'll go on. One of the ways for a student ministry to get involved in international student ministries is to look into their people, some of their families in their church, taking in foreign exchange students. Now, I don't know about your school where you grew up. I don't know your town, your little, cross town, about how many would show up there. Typically, foreign exchange students migrate to the larger cities, but not always. There's a lot of foreign exchange students come to this country, especially from Europe and South America. A lot of them. And my point is here, even in America, let's look at this one. From birth to 5 years old, typically kids are with their parents primarily. That's their big world. Their primary world is, their own private world. From 19 to death, depending on whether they got to go to college or not, and most of us do, a lot of our kids do, they're pretty much isolated then again to work communities and family. But between ages 6 and 18, they all come together in a little narrow slit called public schools. So if they're there, I think we ought to really, as a church and as a youth ministry, look at being intentional about reaching kids in the public school, and therefore building relationship with public school principals, building relationship with public school teachers, finding out who the public school teachers are in our community, in our church, going to schools for lunch, getting in intentionally involved in reaching out to public school kids, because even in your situation with refugees, they still have to go to school. And as soon as they get past the TOEFL test and the English thing, they've got to get into the public school system. And they're going to want support in that public school because they are scared to death when they get there, especially if there's not a lot of them together in community. So public schools is one place to do that. And one of the areas that I mention is number one there on the list is foreign exchange students. And this may not be something that you're interested in or even able to do at this particular time, but my church, I was a youth pastor at my last church in Grand Rapids, Michigan, a city of about 700,000, we had several foreign exchange students. And we had some families, I ran onto this by accident, and then we got more intentional about it. We found some families that love to take in foreign exchange students. And as you know, you may or may not know, you're paid to do that. The government pays you to have an exchange student for 1 year. Basically, they arrive sometime in July, late July, and they stay till June. And the government pays you to take care of them, stipend. But then the interesting thing is, they have to go wherever you tell them. They tell the students, you do what that family does. They go to church, you go to church. They don't have an option to stay home. They're told directly, you do what that family does. Part of your experience here in America. So what we found out was is that the families of our church who had foreign exchange students that brought them into the youth group, once we had transitioned that church youth group into something very evangelistic, we found that these foreign exchange students were coming to Christ within the first 3 or 4 months of them being with us. So I started asking a question. How many of you are, would there be anybody else in the church who would say, I'll take this on as a ministry? Sounds kind of bizarre, but look, if you don't mind having guests in your home, if you're kind of a gift of hospitality, and interesting enough, if you have teenagers in your home that would probably be benefited by having foreign students with them and getting to know another culture, I said, would any of you be willing to look at this as a ministry and volunteer? I'll give you the 800 number, you can call them. And try it 1 year, a foreign exchange. We had several couples do this. And now, just to whet your appetite, just to keep this in the back of your head, the conversion percentage of foreign exchange students in our youth group, you ready for this, was 100%. And these were South American and European students. they'd come in July, end of July, 1st of August, and by usually the end of our fall retreat program, somewhere around the end of October, they had made a decision for Christ. Then that left them with November, December, January, February, March, April, May for us to disciple them. And we got them very much involved. Sometimes we couldn't baptize them because that was something their parents would be really, you know, opposed to or whatever. And I remember this girl, she was from Barcelona, Spain, and she came in and she was one of the foreign exchange students and she got saved at our fall retreat, in fact. She joined our ministry team program and she didn't get baptized. She said, you know, my parents are Catholic in Spain and it probably wouldn't go over so well. And she said, but you know what? I want to get baptized in Spain. So we helped her find a evangelical storefront church, because that's the only size they are in Spain. It's very small. And she went back. She said she went back for Christmas break, and she said, I found an evangelical church, and I've decided to become a part of it. I said, what are you going to do? She said, well, this summer when I go home, I'm getting baptized. I said, well, you sure you don't want us to baptize you here secretly, you know, without your parents knowing it, and then you'll be baptized? You'll be saved. She said, yeah, I just kind of teased, testing her. She said, nope, I'm going to do it there. I said, well, are you going to let your parents know you're going to do it? She said, yep, I'm thinking about how I'm going to tell my dad. Her dad was the president of the Iberian Airline Pilots Association. He was a pilot for Iberia Airlines, which is the Spanish airline. He was way up there, an upper class person. So she finally came to me sometime around April. She said, well, I finally told my dad that I'm getting baptized in this church when I get back. And I said, what'd he say? He said, he's kicking me out of the family. I said, what? He said, yep. He said, if you do that, you got to pack your stuff and move out. Well, I can imagine Dad kind of being nervous about whatever she was getting into. I said, so what are you going to do? She said, I'm going to do it anyway. So she went home, and sure enough, she got baptized and joined that evangelical little storefront church in Barcelona, and her dad kicked her out. But she kept communicating with us, and it came Christmas time, and her dad caved. He said, you know, I can't stand the thought of you not being here for Christmas, so okay, just can't come back, but just don't, you know, don't get preachy on me, you know, whatever. So she ended up moving back home till she got married. Another story was a girl from Brazil came in with one of their families. Got saved again by October, end of October, joined a bunch of our ministry team, great singer, sharp-looking girl, parents were wealthy landowners in Brazil. It takes a little money to send your kid to a program like this. So you're talking upper-class people, upper-middle, upper-class. Interesting, she accepted Christ, joined our youth group, went back home to Brazil, and within about 7 months, we found out she had terminal cancer. And the family who was her from our church, you know, workers in our youth department, who were her surrogate parents here, took their whole family and flew to Brazil to the funeral. And that was quite a deal. But, you know, you got to think about that one and say, wow, providential of God. She came here. She got saved. She goes back home. She dies. How impacting is that? So one way for us to impact the world from where we are is this way. And I wish I'd have thought about that myself as being a part of my great strategy. It ended up being a part of my strategy. Well, the next one is where you are right now, International Refugee Student Ministry. Not just International Refugee Ministry, we're talking student ministry here. When I worked with the Bhutan refugees from Nepal who lived, there were Nepalese who were kicked out of Bhutan and were put in refugee camps along the southern border of Nepal, treated very badly, would not leave. Nepal didn't want them as citizens. Bhutan didn't want them. India didn't want them. So they're like people without a country. Finally, the United Nations and Nepal got together and worked out a way for them to come to the U.S. Well, now there's about probably 2,500, and there's going to be 55,000 eventually come to America. Well, And my research for my ethnology class for my doctoral dissertation, well, not the dissertation, but my DMIS, Doctor of Missiology program, is I began to research, because I was doing some training in Nepal. We're still doing it. We're going back this summer to do our final program. But I found out about these people, so they asked, you know, I did my study on them. And so I found out in these apartment complexes, you know, like Black American and others, that's where all these people end up. And they've got teenagers, right? I mean, do your folks that you're working with have teenagers? Gobs of them. And they are very quick to adapt to American culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just love it.
They love the Wayne.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, hello, why can't our youth group, especially in places like Louisville, who have this, we are refugee capital of the Kentucky, why don't we develop a strategy to reach around the world by reaching refugees, young people in our country? Now, I don't think these Nepalese will ever go back to Bataan, but I tell you, a lot of them were farmers, for sure. In fact, Bhutan brought the Nepali people there to help them develop their agriculture, and they ended up staying. And then when they got stronger and they brought Nepali soldiers there, their Gurkha soldiers, which are some of the most fierce soldiers in the world, they brought them there to help them with security. And then when they got to their own, they booted them out. They didn't want them anymore because they were Hindu and Bhutan's Buddhist. So they're without them. You know, they used and abused them. But they're here. And the teenagers are Hindu, big time. And but they're so open to American culture. They're the most open to the gospel now than they ever were in Nepal, of course, and Bhutan for sure. And they want help. They need help, don't they? I mean, you're talking about needy people. Internet savvy? Oh, yeah. I mean, I went into one Bhutanese Nepali home apartment. They usually, you know, three families live in one apartment. And they're on the internet watching Nepali hip-hop off the internet. These are Nepali bands in Kathmandu. And they're watching them in their rooms here in Louisville. Off YouTube and stuff. They're very savvy. And I'm just thinking, we send our teenagers on planes every summer to go on mission trips. But there they are, right there. And the teenagers pick up the language a lot quicker than their parents do. So these are kids who are bilingual, but look, they need help with language, so why couldn't we do that? Why couldn't we start? In fact, this one church, a Methodist church that I met this gal, she started a conversational English class in her church for these Nepalese and they accepted her immediately. Well, I just sent two youth groups. I'm sending another one this summer to Ukraine to do what we call iCamps, which are English conversation camps in Ukraine. It's a very excellent evangelistic tool. In fact, the conversion rate's about 75% of the Ukraine young people that we bring to these camps. And we're pairing up Americans and Ukrainians to do conversational English with a curriculum that really helps them. And I'm thinking, why can't we do that here? Why can't we develop strategies to reach out to young people who are the most open to the gospel will ever be maybe in their lives right now before they get too caught up in American culture, pop culture? So I think international refugee student ministry is a huge possibility. And before they become just flat out Americanized. Now it's interesting that once they've been in the country for a long time, like the Chinese have, the Chinese church starts up, but the children of those Chinese people came over on the boat, so to speak, they don't want to speak Chinese anymore. They don't speak English. They want English services. They don't want Chinese services. They want to be an American, period. So there's a big even problem between the kids and their parents, especially kids and their grandparents, because they're afraid they're going to lose their culture. So I was thinking of another idea. What if the youth group studied the culture and was able to respect their culture and do some, not if they're satanic or evil or false gods, but do some stuff like develop a cultural dance team or something from that country. and let our teenagers dress like them and do some of their cultural events with them that aren't, you know, aren't worshiping idols or whatever. And that would make their parents even more open to coming to our churches because we're not rejecting their culture along with them. I just think there are some good missiological strategies that could be added to reaching youth and their parents in our country if we want to, at the both high school, middle school, children's age level. So that's one big thing. The other one is international college student ministry. And this is one where I'm really big on that. It's not refugee ministry, but it's identifying international college students that go to community colleges, U of L, other places. There's about 3,000 of them in Louisville. And the number one international group is Chinese. Second number two is Indian, from India. And, of course, we can get our students involved in that. Not our high school kids, more or less, but our college students. And I don't know how many of you have college students in your deal. But when I first came here, I had a big international college student ministry in my church in Grand Rapids. We had about 45 of them coming every Sunday morning. And once a year, we had a big event for them where we got to know them. And we'd have about 275 or 300 of them come to this event. And then we would ask them if they'd like to have a friendship family for a year, just to help them get to know the U.S., help them around the city, help them with things they didn't know about, help them buy food, let's just be a friend to them. And out of those 275 or 300 that would come to this big event, we'd find about 100 of them would do it, about a third of them. So when I came to Louisville, I think you've seen some of this stuff in my class, haven't you? But when we came to Louisville, I jumped in with because the Southern Baptist had an international student leader here at Louisville. I jumped in with him and partnered with him. Now they've moved him out. They've defunded him. This was something that we did here in Louisville that I frankly wish somebody would, about 15 churches got involved. I wish somebody would rally the troops and do it again. I'd be glad to help them because it's a lot of fun. This is, of course, what? The Bell of Louisville. And we have that puppy here. We're trying to think of a way to get international students together to meet them, to offer them friendship families here. Something that's unique. Well, food always gets them. But something we had unique that no other community had was this ship, right? So we offered, we didn't know if it'd work or not, but we said, what if we offer a free cruise and pizza, vegetarian and meat, because a lot of them are vegetarian, pizza party on the Bell of Louisville, 2.5-hour cruise, and then on that boat, do some fun things with them, just fun stuff, no preaching, no Bible story, whatever, but just offer them an opportunity to be adopted by a friendship family in Louisville. And number one, the first time we did it, we didn't know how many show up, and number two, so we started training friendship families on how to reach international students. We had about 50 of them ready. We thought that'd be plenty. Mistake. Number one, we underestimated how many would come. You know, here we are thinking, all right, how many are going to show up here? All of a sudden, we start getting some more people, and all of a sudden, this boat is full of international students. We had a little Dixieland band show up, played some little Dixieland music. And they had a good time. There was one of our international students at U of L. There's Jerry Johnson, who was the North American Mission Board international college student guy, and myself hosting the thing. That was the mayor of Louisville's representative. He sent a representative to this boat thing because they had an international student rep in the mayor's office. He shows up and declares this International Friendship Student Day. You know, like they declare something every day of the week. But anyway, they gave us a big deal, and we gave him that. And he's from Jordan, of all places. And he had just brought his wife. He had been in America for a couple of years, brought his wife, and now she's a student at U of L, Jordan. And there we got, you know, pictures with them. And there's Charles Juma, who works with us from Africa. And these girls are from Germany. And all of a sudden, we had a boatload of people. And look at these. These are from Iran. Now, you tell me where in the world you're going to have time to sit down for 2 hours with an Iranian Muslim and befriend them. You know, well, You can see their pizza over there. There's some more Muslims over there. And they just, we just had a great time with them. These are some more. These are from, I think, Syria. Japanese. Chinese. These guys are from Brazil. I remember those guys are party animals. I think they're God's gift to women, all of Brazilians. And now look at this. Amazing. And did we ever have fun with them? Now, that's just on the first deck. There's another deck. Well, just to tell you, we had over 800 show up. And we presented this little survey that took asked them a lot of questions, and we got them to take fill out the survey because we said we're going to have a drawing about every 20 minutes. We're giving away free dinners to everywhere in Louisville and donated to us. And the last drawing was going to give a free DVD player away, you know. Nowadays, I'd probably give a free iPod or something away. But anyway, so they all filled them out because they wanted to get a free gift. Well, we had like 120 countries represented. Amazing. We asked if they would like to have a Bible in their language. A bunch of them did. Would you like to have a copy of the Jesus film in your native language? A bunch of them did. Would you like to have, and here was the big one, would you like to have a friendship family? And we explained on the boat what that meant, getting together with a family once a month. That's it. Going in their home, we found out that 80% of international students never visit an American home while they're here for six or seven years. Tragedy, I think. So, but that first one, we had 126 of them, of the 800, say, we want a friendship family. We weren't prepared. We had to really, golly, recruit like mad and do some retraining to get it. We were so shocked on how many, you know, showed up and how many wanted to do it. Well, there we are doing some 60s dances with them. And I won't tell you who's in there, but I had some Southern Seminary professors doing dancing the jig out there. I won't tell you. I don't let them forget that either. Now, that's one of my youth majors right there. He's now a youth pastor out in Eastern Kentucky, but he was, and there we did the limbo. That was just a lot of fun. Twist and shout. And yeah, they're leaving the boat, heading off. We gave them a gift bag. Lifeway donated us a bag, so maybe we could talk them to coming to Lifeway and getting some Christian resources. But we filled up that bag with every kind of... And the community, especially Louisville, they know all these internationals are here. That means money for them. So they're giving us gifts like crazy. I mean, we had free gift coupons for Chick-fil-A, Burger King, McDonald's, restaurants. Then the Chamber of Commerce gave us maps of Louisville, every kind of thing under the sun. They walked away with a bunch of goodies. And look how they're dressed. There's one of the Africans right there. There's again from Jordan. There's some more Oriental folks back there. And they're the loneliest people in the world, international students are. They go from their dorm to the library to Walmart to McDonald's back to their dorm. I mean, that's their little circuit they make. And they don't have a lot of friends, all right? So I wonder if they can show this. I don't think it's going to work. That's supposed to be a video. I'm not very good at electronics. But anyway, we were dancing. We had a good time. So, in fact, maybe there's another one that has that. Some different pictures of the same, of a different cruise. No, that's the same cruise. That's one with the guy. And we had things, we had games for children. So they loved that. We loved on their kids, and they had a great time with that. There's some more of them from all over the world. There's another Iranian. There's Troy Temple. He loved it. And by the way, we got great pizza. A lot of the pizza was donated. So we buy some of it and donate some. Here's a list of one of the lists that we drew up from some of the surveys.
75%
that was an interesting stat. Of the ones that showed up, 75% of the ones that showed up were from the 1040 window. And if you're familiar with the 1040 window concept, it's that little square on the planet where most of the unreached people groups still live, and you can't get missionary visas to go in the countries. So the 1040 window is that like target area for a lot of mission agencies. It stretches from Western Africa all the way over to China. Eastern Africa all the way across over to China. So, in other words, of this group, 75% were from countries that we can't send missionaries to legally. They have to go in on platforms, you know, like business or English or digging wells or something. But they were here with us. They're here with us.
Azerbaijan.
Yeah.
Wow. Where is that?
It's over former Soviet Union area. Sri Lanka, Bosnia. Now we have a lot of Bosnians in Louisville. Just amazing. So what I'm saying is that, and what I gave you a handout there is actually was just a strategy that I used. I think she already has those notes. She was in my class. is a strategy, not the only one, but a strategy to reach them. It's pretty simple. By the way, you're talking about a biblical precedent. Look at this. I mean, these are scriptures that demonstrate how Christians were reaching internationals in the Bible. And of course, one of the first was at Leviticus 19, 33 through 34. And it goes all the way back to the Old Testament. And I want to read that one to you because it's really interesting. Instructions to the Jewish people. It says, when an alien lives with you in your land, do not mistreat him. The alien living with you must be treated as one of your native born. Ouch. Love him as yourself. For you were aliens in Egypt. I am the Lord your God. It's like, hello. And we're here as Christian Americans, and we need to be loving the aliens that are in our midst. And if you recall your Bible stories, when the Israelis left Egypt, they took a lot of alien non-Jews with them, thousands of them, who they said, "Can we go with you?" Cornelius in Acts 10 was a Roman that Peter did not want to reach. So here was alien Romans and Greeks living in Palestine, and God said through some pretty interesting deals, said, you need to reach them. You need to go after these Gentiles, these aliens in your midst. So even the early church struggled with it. If you look at the Feast of Pentecost in Acts 2 and 41 following, they had Jewish people coming from every nation on the planet at that time who spoke just about every language. And that's why we had the gift of tongues born at Pentecost, so they could hear the gospel in their own heart language. So there's a lot of instance in the Bible where we as Christians were supposed to reach out to our people there. And I just developed this little, even Genesis 12, 1 through 3, that we're supposed to, that the Jews are supposed to be a blessing to all people of all nations. And there's other passages. If you read Deuteronomy 10, 18 to 19, other passages, you find many, many examples of Christians who are, and God-believing people who were to reach out to non-Christians and aliens. I don't like the word alien, but in their community. So we have a model for it. It's just that we don't pay a lot of attention to it. And the rest of that is simply that I go to take home with you is that if you want to start, for example, a ministry to international students, it's not that difficult. You could either partner with the Baptist Student Union or the Baptist groups on campus at U of L, send a representative there, find out if you're not in Louisville. I know there's Campus Crusade and InterVarsity and Navigators that are ministering on college campuses. Just join them and try to plug them into the local church. And I think that's where they belong. So discover, number one, discover existing campus ministries and partner with them. Or do this route. Research the opportunities yourself. Every college campus that has international students has an FSA person. That's a foreign student advisor. Go to them, find out how many international students are on that campus in your town. Find out if they could use some help hosting those international students. They always say, yes, please help us, please help us. We're short on volunteers. So they're always looking for help. So volunteer to get involved. Then go, if you find out there's enough of them in your city to do something, just some simple tips, go to your pastor and church board. Present your passion to reach the international, whether it's refugees or college students. And then go to your church missions committee even and see if they're willing to help out. Go through the right channels. Go through your pastoral leadership team. Then present it to the whole congregation on some Sunday evening. Let them talk, share the scriptures and share the vision with them. Then just start putting together a volunteer team. These are all volunteers that I put together in Grand Rapids. I myself became the director of that ministry because I love doing it. I got me a promotion director, a communications director, a volunteer training person to train the Friendship Families, someone to coordinate assigning students to the Friendship Families, just typical volunteer jobs. Some of them put together three or four activities a year for the international students. Some of them worked on going, picking them up at the dorms and bringing them to the events. Materials coordinator, we found books, Bibles in their language, Jesus films in their language. Orientation materials. If you're dealing with Islamic people, we found some materials on how to minister to Islamic people. And there's a group called FSI that will send your church all kinds of information on international college students. So ISI, International Students Incorporated, and their website. They'll send you stuff really cheap on how to reach almost every nationality that you can imagine. We met once a month.
Is that web address?
No, but it's International Students Incorporated, and I don't think I might have showed it at the bottom. No. But they help me get my ministry going, and that's all they do. They sponsor students on college campuses all over the country, just to reach internationals. That's all they do. So they're experts on it, and they have training materials. They'll give you you can sign up and be an international. Like a church partner with them, and they'll come help train your volunteers. Great people.
What was the web address again?
International Students Incorporated. Are you looking for their site?
Yes, sir.
Just Google ISI if you got a Google deal in there, or International Students Incorporated. Did you find it? I wonder if I'm still on the... Here it is. There it is, isionline.org. And man, they are, look at this. I mean, look at the resources. Training materials, materials for purchase, free material, how to be a church partner with them, which we were one of their first local churches that actually partnered with them off the campuses. Tells you how to get involved and so forth. Great group of people. The guy who ran the Billy Graham Crusades ended up being the president of that organization. So really, really, really sharp people. I ought to copy that and put it in my PowerPoint. Anyway. So it's not rocket science. It's really pretty easy. We met monthly to talk about how to recruit these people. We planned a big event. It was a friendship banquet in Grand Rapids, a friendship cruise. I just showed you that here in the U.S. in the Louisville. We had friendship families from our church in Grand Rapids volunteer. We trained them about, I think it was about 4 Saturdays. We trained them, or you could do it all in 1 Saturday if you did the whole day. They give ISI gives you a great training material, how to, and a book. You had the textbook, didn't you, in my class, World at Your Door? In my 448 class?
No,
or
not that one.
Not that one? It's called World at Your Door, written by the president of ISI. I had all my people read it. Great preparation. Trained you how to work with international students. It's called World at Your Door. So we planned some meetings, some activities. We did some English help with them, conversational English classes. We figured out how to meet their needs, help them moving into the dorm, help them buy insurance. I helped a guy from Hong Kong. And interesting, I no longer, this is my last semester teaching at Boyce. I'm going to be doing my Youth Ministry International full-time. And so I had to raise some support to do that. And it's interesting, one of my first international students in Grand Rapids, a non-believer Hindu who got his master's in business from Grand Valley State, is supporting me for my mission agency. He said he wants to give $250 a month to my support, and he's not a Christian. But you know why? Because we became such close friends. He invited me to his wedding in India. I didn't get to go, but he still wants me to meet his family. My wife and I were the only Americans at his graduation. He had three Indians come over, and that was it. So they're lonely people. So friendships are great, and you can meet medical needs, insurance needs, and they just love it. So it's not a hard strategy. I mean, you can imagine with your refugee ministry, you offer help, and they'll take it immediately. So I say we just need to look around us, and whether it's foreign exchange students, refugees, or international students, if we've got a heart for missions, then let's do it here too. Let's don't wait. And I tell my missions majors at Boyce, you feel called to China, then start ministering to Chinese right here. Don't wait. You know, China's the biggest club at U of L. Go jump in there with them. If you feel called to Muslim countries, then find some. There's some Saudi Arabian kids here. You'll never get to witness to them in Saudi Arabia. So do it here. Find out what a Shiite and a Sunni Muslim is right here. So anyway, this session was just about, even in student ministry, you can impact the world from right where you are. And it's been something I've enjoyed doing. Any questions? Any other particular areas you're headed for? We got about 15 minutes before the last session starts over there. Glad you guys are getting involved over there. See what happens.
Nowhere to start.
It's a big need.
I have questions.
Yeah. I would encourage some of my people who take it really serious to even start learning learn their language, because like you said, it's a big barrier. But remember this, 90% of culture is the heart language of the country, of the people. If you start learning to speak some of their words, even if it's just a very few, and gradually pick it up and let them help you learn language, they'll love you forever. Because when you speak their language, it's like you're touching their heart. Now, we don't really think that way, because we've always spoken English, and that's all we know. Until you're traveling somewhere where nobody understands you, and all of a sudden somebody speaks English, you go, oh, yes, come here, give me a hug. Finally, I found somebody who speaks my English. Well, but that's what they feel about you even here. So learn some of the language. It's a great tool. And meet needs. That's the best thing I can tell you. Meet needs, love them, and don't try to get them in church too quickly. Meet them where they are at their place and share the gospel relationally, and then there was just to let you know before you go here, when that Nepal ministry, we got it started and going with them. Now they planted a Nepali church here in Louisville. You say, well, wait a minute. You mean you didn't get them in your Baptist church? Well, quite honestly, there's something to say about homogenous ministry. You know, some of these guys will never fit in some of our Southern Baptist churches. So what do you do? Say, join us or we'll forget you? Maybe we need to plant a church among the Ethiopians or the Sudanese or the, and just help them plant their own church and work with them there, because they feel so, they just can't adjust to our Southern Baptist culture very easily. It sounds spiritual to have a coalition of all the nationals in the world, you know, coming to our church. But sometimes it just doesn't work reaching them. So, all right, well, thanks for coming to my breakout group.